This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Good morning. The ripples from the dangerous high-stakes standoff that's happening in that crucial stretch of water called the Strait of Hormuz continue to roll out across the world into our lives here in Victoria. I'm Mary Guerin. This is The Conversation Hour, and we've been talking for several days now about all the ways the war in the Middle East is affecting all of our daily lives. And yesterday we heard of the domino effect on our tradies. I'd love to hear from you if you are a tradie. Yesterday, a couple did call into the Conversation Hour. Here's Builder Gary speaking first, followed by Briley and Apprentice.
Good morning, Mary. I'm a builder, and we can't work from home, and it's going to be real fun trying to get our tools and equipment, et cetera, and materials on the trains and buses. It just won't work.
So what are you thinking of doing? Carpooling with utes?
You can't do that.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're going to do. If they shut the fuel down, we're just going to have to stay home and building will stop.
Yeah. Or the prices get put on to your customers, no doubt.
Well, we have to. We can't absorb the government's inadequacy.
Briley, you've called in from Keilor. What have you got to say?
I was just, you know, a bit worried about what I'm going to do as an apprentice. Like, I got a van full of tools. Like, I've been to a couple of stations where all the fuel's gone. Diesel especially, it's gone from a few, like, I've shut it off at a few gas stations.
Yeah, so we heard from Gary just before, and you're an apprentice there, Briley. Are you, how do you plan for a crisis and you don't know when it's going to end?
Well, yeah, especially, you know, me being so young, like, I don't even understand half of this stuff. So it's, like, really stressful on my mind and what I'm going to do in these next few weeks, you know.
Are you like Gary and Briley? If you're a tradie, how is this affecting you? How are you planning to cope with the higher fuel prices? How are you doing it already? If you're renovating, have your builders already warned you of rising costs? I'd love to hear your stories, how you even hope to cope with a situation where seemingly no one knows how and when and where it's going to end. Phil, you're a plumber. You've already called in from Cowes. Thanks for calling. What's your experience?
My experience is this. I've been saying for 5 years that petrol's been too cheap, and I've prepared myself and put some money away for the one day for the price increase. But one thing about trade is, and if you're a subcontractor, remember, if you're an office worker, I can claim my petrol off my tax. So there's a benefit, isn't there? I think just people are just too greedy, to be quite honest. You know what I mean?
So you've got a tax break because you're a tradie. You think that will be sufficient, Phil?
I think so. And I'm just in the process. I'm going to get myself an electric car just in case things get... And that's a problem. People don't want to fork out in their business to make more money. They just, I don't know, a lot of business people just like to whinge and whinge and whinge. I don't. I just get on with the job.
Phil, thank you for calling in. Are you like Phil? Have you seen this coming and have you tried to hedge against this sort of thing happening if you're a tradie? Tell me your stories, how it's affecting you. Is it inevitable if you are a tradie to pass it on to customers? Maybe you are looking at that tax break already that Phil has mentioned. I'd love to hear your stories. Maybe you're rethinking your renovations or your building works because of this. Please tell me what's going on for you. Also, the pain in the regions we've been hearing is real. I've been hearing a lot of your stories about those ripples from the Middle East rolling into regional areas more quickly and more strongly than into our big cities. And they're all facing similar issues, but we're going to go to one shire today that's copping it from several angles. That's East Gippsland. It's a huge area. It's got little public transport. It's dependent on agriculture, tourism. Those are things that are going to be hit by those soaring fuel prices. We're going to be talking to the CEO of the Shire. If you're in East Gippsland and how you are looking towards the Easter tourism season, any of those regions being hit by the prices, I'd love to hear from you. Maybe if you are a regional operator in tourism, we'd love to hear how you're planning. Later on this hour as well, can you imagine being a worker on one of those tanks in the Strait of Hormuz? Iran has threatened to fire at any vessels trying to cross. US officials have said Iran has already laid mines in the channel. So the vast majority of tankers are trapped or stranded, and the workers on those vessels as well. What of those seafarers? What would it like to be them? How much danger are they in? Are they trapped in that war zone indefinitely? If you're one of the many seafarers out there, Conversation Hour has talked to you before about this, and I know you're out there. There are so many of those unsung workers who make global trade possible. Have you been in a place of conflict? I'd love to hear from you. So stick around later, because I'll be speaking to someone who does work in maritime welfare to get an insight into the dangers of that those seafarers are facing and have faced in times of global conflict. We will keep talking about tradies copping these fuel prices and potentially their customers as well. Anna has texted in saying, yes, Phil. Phil called to say he'd been looking ahead of time and he's been putting some money away and getting potentially an EV as well. Should tradies be doing that? I'd love to know what you think. Scott is saying, hi, on the bright side, high fuel costs will keep the jet skis out of the water. Maybe you agree with Scott there. I'd love to hear from you. So we will keep talking about that. But next, let's talk about what's happening in East Gippsland.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
So East Gippsland is a vast area of the state, and joining me now is Fiona Weigel, the CEO of the East Gippsland Shire Council, to talk about the effect of these rising fuel prices on the Shire. Thanks for joining us, Fiona.
Good morning, Mary, and good morning to your listeners from beautiful East Gippsland.
It is beautiful. And I hadn't realised this. I looked it up. 21,000 square kilometres of a Shire. That's enormous.
It is enormous. If you think about it, we go all the way from Bairnsdale, follow the coastline all the way up to Mallacoota, and then up into the high country, Bunambra, Omeo and back. So we like to think of ourselves as that triangle, that pointy end of Victoria. We've got some of the, you know, most magnificent coastline and the Gippsland Lake. So it's a really big area, and we've got communities right through that area.
So from that, what are the effects of rising fuel prices? You don't have much public transport, is that right?
Very little. You know, we've got three train services a day into Melbourne and very little internal public transport. So whilst Melbourne has that opportunity to use public transport, that's something that our residents are finding really hard to do because we don't have those opportunities. So there's those sort of issues. There's issues around how we support industry. You know, we've got a big proportion of food production comes from East Gippsland and right through rural Victoria that is really impacted by this. It's a really important time of year for our farmers as they start to think about, you know, seeding and getting ready to grow the next sets of crops. So a really important time for us to be thinking and working with our community about what this means, not just for council services, but also for our communities.
It's coming up to 11:15 and you're listening to Fiona Weigel, the CEO of East Gippsland Shire Council. If you're in East Gippsland, I'd love to hear from you. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. Fiona, what have people in the community been telling you about the impact of these rising fuel prices? You mentioned there, you know, various industries, including agriculture, I'm assuming, that must be getting a real hit.
It's all the uncertainty at the moment. It's, you know, we have had some supply issues. We've certainly seen price escalation. So it's the uncertainty of how to plan for that, whether that's council planning for our services or whether that's community understanding what they're going to do with their business or how they're even going to continue to try, you know, get to work or get to those goods and services. I think if we think back to what happened during those COVID restrictions and the cost escalation, so I think at the moment it's about that uncertainty. You know, we don't know how long this is going to go on for. So here at council, where, you know, we're really doing a lot of planning around what do we do to keep our essential services operational, recognising that we've got a really important role to play with our community.
And The other industry that we were talking about that will take a hit is tourism. We're heading towards Easter. What are people thinking about that?
Absolutely, and I think we know that tourism is really important to our region. You know, we welcome over 1 million visitors a year, and locally it's worth over $600 million annually for our local economy. We saw what happened to our industries in the aftermath of the bushfires, and we also know that the Easter period and the school holidays is a really important period for our businesses. It's when a lot of our businesses, a lot of our communities do a lot of their fundraising, and that gets them through the winter months, which are obviously a lot slower. So I guess what we're asking Victorians to do is to not stay away, but think about how you can come to East Gippsland cleverly. You know, if you're using public transport in Melbourne, then it gives you the opportunity to perhaps use some fuel to come and visit us here in East Gippsland over the Easter and the that April period. So
save up your fuel for the holidays instead.
Save up your fuel for that period, because we really need you to still come and visit.
Fiona, I'll ask you to stay on the line. Also this morning we've been asking about tradies and the effect on them. Sue has called in from Tatura, and your son is a tradie, is that right?
Yes, he is. He does sort of installations of heating and cooling systems in all the new build houses, but he's often sent quite long distances. So from Shepparton, you know, he'll go quite often to Bendigo, Yarrawonga, or do round trips. So he needs a lot of fuel to get around. Mm. And if there is a shortage of fuel, obviously, because he's a subcontractor, if they don't go and do the jobs, they don't get paid along with like everybody else. So, you know, your mortgage still has to be paid and your bills and everything else. So, it's especially in rural areas when they've got to cover such a large distance to go to work and do their work.
It's so interesting to hear from you, Sue, and we also heard this morning from Phil. I don't know if you heard, he's a plumber who says that he's been planning for this. This is why he's put money away. This is why he's thinking about an EV. What would you have to say to that, the idea that your son is going to potentially have to rethink how he does things?
It's all very good on paper and in theory, but I find that with them subcontracting, I don't know that they get enough money to put money aside. There seems to be always expenses involved to do the work that they do. So I think it's hard in general to save these days, even, you know, not just tradies, but anybody in general. I think we're all sort of just getting by.
That's true. We are all under the pump because of these fuel prices. Thank you, Sue. And thank you, Fiona Weigel, for staying on the line. The conversation has sort of morphed a little in the past few minutes in terms I can see on text. A lot of people agreeing with Phil that we need to adapt. And so I guess just to finish off with you, how does that adapt to a rural area? You've got a large area to service with not a large population. How much is resilience on your mind about building for resilience to these sort of events in the future?
It's a really important part of what we do. We have a whole team that's focused on resilience. You know, we switched our energy purchases across to sustainable energy. We're working with a range of councils on what is the biggest renewable energy contract, I think, in Victoria. So we're already purchasing all of our energy renewably. We've been working on making sure we've got a network of EV chargers right across our shire, so that when we're talking about those visitors, and whether it's for work or pleasure or even our local community, they can access EV chargers right across our shire. Mm. And we're looking at what we do to transition our own services to those sort of resilient services. So we've got EVs in our fleet. We're looking at, you know, electric lawnmowers and all those sort of things that we're using, because we recognise that the world is changing, the climate is changing, people are changing, and we need to be resilient. And to do that, we need to change as well.
Fiona Weigel, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mary. Great to chat.
Great to chat to you too. Fiona is the CEO of East Gippsland Shire Council. This from Nuggles on text. I'm in Maffra, that's Wellington Shire next to East Gippie Shire. Are federal and state ministers doing an emergency roundtable like health in COVID? Any talks on supply provision? Nuggles, I think those talks are happening as we speak in Canberra about what happens next. So many of your texts coming through on this topic that we are following throughout the morning. What effect will rising fuel prices have on your renovations and the tradies who do them?
I've been saying for 5 years that petrol's been too cheap, and I've prepared myself and put some money away for the one day for the price increase. But one thing about tradies, and if you're a subcontractor, remember, if you're an office worker, I can claim my petrol off my tax. So there's a benefit, isn't there? I think just people are just too greedy, to be quite honest.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Well, you heard Phil. He kicked off a whole other conversation. That was Phil the plumber talking to me a few minutes ago, talking about the effect of rising fuel prices on tradies and what that means for all of us, whether we're having renovations or not. Susan, you've called in from Great Ocean Road. What do you think?
I'd have to disagree with Phil, because many people who work in the city actually have the availability to public transport. If you're a tradie, you have to carry your tools with you. One point. Easter's coming up. I would recommend that people ring Properties Direct and save themselves 10 to 12%, because a lot of people are very unaware that bookings.com, Expedia, TripSee, all of those take a 12 to 15% commission, and that money goes offshore, no tax paid to us.
Yeah. Are you in the tourism industry, Susan?
Yes, I am actually. I'm a motelier.
Yeah. Are you afraid about the effect of all of this on the Easter holidays?
Not really, because I think for those that don't go overseas, people travel in their own country, and that's why I'm sort of imploring Australians to just do a little bit of homework, call the Property Direct and save yourself 10%.
It's a good tip. It's a good tip, Susan. Thank you so much for calling in. I'd love to hear from you as well if you are in the tourism industry. Give me a call, 1300 222 774. How are you approaching Easter? But we are as well talking about the effect of rising fuel prices on the tradies. I'm joined now by Michaela Lahou, CEO of Master Builders Victoria. Thank you for joining me, Michaela.
Thanks very much, Mary.
What have you seen and heard from your members?
Look, I think it's important to acknowledge that it's not just our industry that's affected by the increase in fuel at the moment. It's affecting a lot of other industries too. And it's important to understand that since 2019, the cost of building products and materials have increased by almost 38%. So that is contributing to significant rise in house prices and the ongoing cost pressures that are being faced by both builders and consumers.
When you say consumers, do you think that those rising prices are going to inevitably flow on to consumers?
Inevitably, yes. The way the industry is structured, if you have entered into a fixed price contract with a builder, that builder is going to have to be wearing all of those increases in fuel prices, and there'll be increases to fuel prices for the supply of goods as well. So there'll be that flow-on effect. But if consumers are entering into new contracts with builders, that's where you'll see that direct flow-on in the short term.
Do you expect then that the demand for works will diminish in the next little while, or have you already seen that happen?
There will be impacts if we see increases in interest rates and the broader challenges with inflation. That will all impact whether people are able to get funding for renovations or new builds.
And the interest rates decision actually happens today. Michaela Lahou, we've been hearing this morning from a few people who agreed with Phil, the plumber, who phoned up and said, look, we get the tax break on the fuel. I've planned ahead. Everyone should have been planning ahead. I'm thinking of getting an EV. There's a very big section of the texting that I've seen that says, I love this attitude, and all these tradies have been ripping us off for years. You don't hear this belly aching when it's all cheap. What's your response this morning?
Look, I think from an EV perspective, that's arguably up for for each builder, each trade to determine what their fleet looks like. We also need to understand the cost implications that the fuel costs are going to hit tradies and builders now. Couple that with a whole lot of additional red tape and regulation, which the government is looking at to introduce to the industry right now. Cash flow is going to be critical for the success of the industry and these builders. And the additional reforms, we're seeing changes to the National Construction Code, proposed minimum financial requirements being expanded to the industry. These all have impacts on the costs that these builders are wearing and their cash flow.
Michaela, I guess everyone, including yourself, is going to be watching for that interest rate decision today. Good luck.
Thanks very much.
Good luck to all of us. Michaela Lahou is CEO of the Master Builders Victoria. And we were, of course, talking to Briley yesterday. He's an apprentice who gave a pretty, you know, raw account, saying he just didn't know what was going on. He's confused by events going on over there and doesn't know how to go forward with his apprenticeship with that amount of money needed for fuel. I'm joined by Andrew McCarthy, who's CEO of Victorian Group Training. They recruit apprentice tradies and match them with business. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how are you, Mary? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. What have you been hearing from apprentices?
Oh, look, no doubt the rising fuel costs is a concern for our apprentices. Look, we're not seeing an immediate impact right now, but we are concerned as an industry that this will have a flow-on effect, I think, to attract apprentices to the trade more so.
What's the trend so far? Has it been going up or down in terms of interest?
So across the board, the apprenticeship sign-up numbers are declining. That's been on a steady decline for the last 3 years. But it's more around these young workers that are entering into their first job, and it's having a vehicle for an apprenticeship is essential. And I think it's important to note that, you know, for many of these apprentices, getting to work isn't just a daily commute. It's a part of their job. They need tools for their trade. They need to carry tools to get to work. So having a vehicle and using their fuel is essential. So, yeah, it is having an impact.
And, Andrew McCarthy, you have offices in Geelong and Colac. We're talking this morning about the effect of particularly anybody in the regions, but I guess for you, the apprentices in the regions, it's a double effect.
Yeah, it is. It is. Like, for us, you know, rural and regional, you know, it's hard to sort of to quantify a lot of these. The minimum trip for a lot of our apprentices just to start their day would be a 30-minute drive. You know, some of them are in their cars for up to an hour just to, or in their utes or whatever it is, to start their day of work. It's up, you know, can be in excess of an hour. So that is a lot of fuel a lot of these vehicles are using, and they're not just the light vehicles, they're not EV vehicles. I heard you mentioning that before, that they are sort of, you know, 1-ton-plus vehicles that use a lot of fuel.
Yeah, just lastly on that point, because we have had this discussion introduced by Phil the plumber, who called in saying, look, should tradies have been seeing this coming, going to EV vehicles, I beg your pardon, that's tautology, EVs, and should they have been saving for the rainy day because global conflicts happen, essentially? What do you think of that point of view?
I don't agree with that. It's pretty hard for a young worker who has never started a career to start saving. They're, like I said, this is their first job. They're on low wages as it is. And a large portion of that wage is, you know, up to $80 to $100 or $100, sorry, is going towards fuel. So, and for them to put away money, which they haven't really got, to, you know, buy an EV, I think that's a bit off the mark.
Just having this text in, can we be a bit more empathetic to apprentices who don't have the money to wait for tax breaks or invest in EVs? So definitely sympathy there, Andrew. Thank you very much for joining us.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
That's Andrew McCarthy, who's CEO of Victorian Group Training. It's half past 11, and we will continue this conversation. In fact, Kevin Butler, who's co-founder and president of BlazeAid Fuel Crisis, is joining us to talk about the effect on that volunteer effort. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Mary.
So your whole BlazeAid community effort is about volunteering, but it costs money. How have you responded to these rising fuel prices?
Well, the board met on the weekend and we decided to subsidise the cost of fuel to $1.50 a litre. So if petrol now is at $2.30, that means that the volunteer would pay 70 or 80 cents and we would pay the $1.50. And it's for those volunteers who are travelling from home, say Melbourne, and they're going to come to a BlazeAid camp. Let's say it's Ruffy. So we'll pay the fuel all the way to Ruffy and we'll pay it back as well. The only catch is while they're enjoying the free fuel and free accommodation and free food on the fire front and helping roll up the old fencing and rebuild new ones with the team and the local farmer, they need to get up at half past six in the morning, have eggs and bacon for breakfast, and go out there, and they have to put in 7 days to get that rebate back. So and even volunteers who have been and helped us in the last 2 weeks after the war began, we're going to reimburse them as well. Yeah, and there's no cost at camp on fuel because we'll provide it all. We've got two big carriers and four-wheel drives and we bang about four or five people in safely seat-belted up and to go out to the fire areas. So reckon is that it's going to cost us perhaps $1,000 a week or more to help fund people to come up to BlazeAid. We've got about 8 camps in Victoria after the fires, but the BlazeAiders do around about $80,000 worth of work a day.
Yeah, wow. Is that an extra $1,000 a day, a week, did you say? Extra
$1,000
a day because of the fuel prices?
Yeah, look, we don't know yet. Yesterday was the first day and I was in contact with our daughter Melissa in the office and seeing what sort of, I know it was a bit busy in there, but I didn't get any data at all. But the way that, volunteers are just the salt of the earth. And I can remember in 2009, I had a voucher given to me for $2,000 for fuel and I was very sort of secretive with it. And I said, come up to me if you think you need fuel. And no one came up. They just, when I asked, they said, well, this is our payback for a great Australia. We've had a great life. This is our payback. So not everyone is going to ask for help. But you've got, probably couples who say, oh, look, I'll bring the kids up for the holidays. They need to be over 12 as part of their work experience or, volunteering with their school. And, well, it's virtually, paid for.
So so that sounds amazing. You do such great work. You are subsidising the petrol to get to and from, is that right?
So that's right,
From home.
Yep.
So it sounds
and
like
diesel,
a terrific thing for people to do. How many more volunteers do you need, Kevin?
Oh, I'd like an army. I think we've got 200 on the ground today. So the average size is probably about 20, 25 volunteers per camp. There's about 4 or 5 teams out on farms in that particular camp. So we're probably out on about 30, 40 farms today. We believe that we'll have to go till September if the fuel was the same price. Our volunteer numbers have dropped off because of the fuel crisis. Mm. So we're hoping to build them up again to the... I know Longwood had up to 60 volunteers a day and we're really smashing it. And then it fell down to about 20 and Deborah and Amanda who run the camp said, oh, Kevin, you got to do something. That's what we've done. So
How can people get in touch to help, Kevin?
It's very easy. They just Google BlazeAid current camps and up will come the 8 camps in Victoria and then they just ring the coordinator and say, hey, look, I'd like to come and help. And we'll say, you're going to be in for dinner tonight? there's room for you to plug in your van or you set up your van or your swag or we've even got pods for accommodation. And over at Harcourt, we've got a camp over there, a school camp, and we've got units over there. So, the more the merrier. And if we felt if we didn't do this, Because it costs around about $5,000 a week to run a camp by feeding everyone, if the camp is extended by another 10 to 12 weeks and extrapolated across, say, eight, nine camps, we're up for another $500,000.
Yeah.
So we reckon it's really proactive to help people with fuel, get them up there, get them helping. It is 7 days they have to work with us. And we get the job done quicker. We all go home and we wait for the next fire season or flood to come.
Kevin, yeah. That's absolutely terrific that you're on the front foot with this, and it sounds terrific. Look at that. You get some free fuel when you're there, subsidised fuel on the way up. Why wouldn't you do it? Kevin Butler, thank you.
Thanks, Mary, for having me.
That's Kevin Butler, who is co-founder and president, of course, of Blaze Aid. So, subsidised fuel to get to and from if you complete 7 days or more in the camp. Terrific venture there and a little bit more incentive to go. We will continue with this conversation. But coming up next, there's a new airline in town, or is it?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
It is 24 minutes to 12 and I'm joined by Andrew Lund, who's spokesperson for Melbourne Airport. Hi, and thanks for joining me, Andrew.
Morning, Mary. How are you?
As I trip over my own tongue, tell me, there's a new airline in town, or is it?
Well, look, yes, a very exciting day for us today. British Airways has just announced that they will be starting daily flights to Melbourne from January, from Melbourne to London via Kuala Lumpur. From January next year. So January 11, we'll have the first arrival. And then from there, they'll be flying every day from Melbourne through to London. So we know that over the course of a year, an average international flight's worth about $190 million to the Victorian economy. So it's a really exciting day for not just us, but the state in general.
We have had British Airways here before. It used to go via Singapore, did it not, over to Europe? But they ended a while ago.
Yeah, almost 20 years to the day, actually. So today's announcement's really timely. 20 years ago, they were flying with Boeing 747s, which have four engines. These new flights, they'll be operating with Boeing 787s, which are a new generation of aircraft. They have two engines, much more fuel efficient, slightly smaller. So it just makes the economics of this route, stack up that much better than they may have 20 years ago.
Andrew Lund, gee, it's a hard sell, isn't it, these days with a war going on and the airline tickets going up?
Look, I think it's probably really timely because this just means people have another option of getting to Europe. Obviously, the Middle Eastern carriers play a really important role in connecting Melbourne to Europe. But other connections through Asia, like what British Airways has announced today, are really, important in situations like this and important generally just to give consumers choice. And to highlight that when these flights go on sale later tonight, BA is going to be offering return flights to Europe for under $2,000, which in the current climate is pretty good.
So it's locked in. They won't change.
It's locked in. $1,960 you can expect to find flights if you look for this time next year on BA.com from later tonight. That's a pretty reasonable price, all things considered at the moment.
What's the talk in the industry about how long those routes will need to change for? I guess not just about trying to look into a crystal ball and figure out what the US president is thinking and so forth, but actually just about the ongoing trust that passengers may or may not have flying those routes.
Look, it's a really hard one, I guess, particularly for the Gulf carriers who are obviously caught up in the middle of it all, the likes of Emirates and Qatar Airways. This is going to be a big hit for them, particularly given the government's current advice there as well. But it's really how long is a piece of string. They'll be pretty keen to restart normal operations as soon as they can, but obviously that's all dependent on how the situation evolves, and I don't think any of us really know what's going to happen there. Fuel prices are the other thing that airlines will be keeping a very close watch on, like the rest of us, and what they do and what impact that has on the economics of flying. So we're all kind of in the same holding pattern, I guess, that everybody else is.
A good analogy for an airplane. But in other words, we have heard that prices will go up. That's almost inevitable. Is that not right?
Look, it depends. I think The airlines will certainly incur greater fuel costs, but a lot of the airlines do hedge their fuel, so they buy fuel well ahead of time. So some of those impacts may not be felt on their bottom line for a little while yet. And I would say that competition is the consumer's friend in all of this. So announcements like British Airways today, bringing an extra player into the market, that does help keep downward pressure on prices that, people are paying for their tickets.
Yeah. And then there was Finnair last year announced they're coming to town.
That's right. Finnair is going to be starting daily flights out of Melbourne from October. So by this time next year, we'll have two new airlines flying daily, each of them, between Melbourne and Europe. So, you know, that's around 600 extra seats a day between Melbourne and Europe. So for consumers, that's really good. And obviously, you know, it just gives people more choice. It'll make Melbourne the most connected airline to Europe of any Australian airport. We'll have British Airways, Finnair and Turkish Airlines flying to Melbourne. Sydney Airport's only got British Airways and Turkish Airlines. So it's you know, really good for Melbourne, really good to see the airlines committing to Melbourne, investing in Melbourne. And they're obviously confident in what we have to offer, which I think in these strange times is really reassuring.
Strange times indeed. Andrew, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Andrew Lund, spokesperson from Melbourne Airport, talking about British Airways, joining Finnair. Many more options in the skies. Maybe you can tell me 1300 222 774. If this makes you want to go overseas more, maybe you want to go to the regions, as we've been hearing this morning, support our local communities. What does tourism look like in your world? I would like to know. But let's go now from the skies to the seas. Let's talk seafarers. As I mentioned earlier, they are responsible for transporting more than 90% of the world's goods and fuels, according to my next guest, those workers on those big tankers. So when we look to the Strait of Hormuz, there are concerns for the welfare of the seafarers trapped, potentially stranded. What would it be like to be a seafarer now there, or during any global conflict? What sort of support is available to them? If you're a seafarer, or if there's a seafarer in your family, please share your experience as well. 1300 222 774 is the number to call, or 0437 774 774 is the number to text. Joining me now is Sue Dyte, Regional Director of Australia and PNG for the Mission to Seafarers. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. This is a maritime welfare organisation that you're in. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the importance of seafarers, but of course the toll that global conflicts can have on them.
At the moment, there's roughly, well, there's estimates of anywhere between 20 and 30,000 seafarers, passengers, people, stuck in the Strait of Hormuz. They are sitting on ships in warmer environments that doesn't necessarily give them the opportunity, or won't give them the opportunity, to get ashore, to go home. They're worried about whether or not their ship might be hit next.
Are they on the ship themselves, Sue?
They're on the ships. So they have to maintain the ships, the engines, the fuel cycles, keep them running just in case they can actually get out. But they do have to be on board ship. And you heard from your last speaker, there's flights that are grounded in the UAE across the region. So seafarers can't go home either.
And of course,
they can't get off their ships. They can't bring on new crew.
And they're in a war zone. There would be missiles potentially flying overhead.
There's also small skiffs that are going across from Iran that are putting bombs on the sides of the ships. There's also, we know that there, at this stage there are no sea mines, but...
Is that true? I thought there was some reporting that from US officials that Iran had started laying mines.
Quite possibly. I hadn't heard it yet, but I know about the skiffs.
It's also murky, Sue. You wouldn't be blamed for not knowing.
There's so much news coming out. I'm getting daily reports around different activities that are happening. We know that as of today, 8 seafarers have passed away, have died.
Been killed.
Being killed on board ship. because of what's happening. Their ships are being bombed. There's one missing. The ships are on fire. There's a Russian ship currently that has been abandoned, and it's floating around the Mediterranean. It's a ticking time bomb. It doesn't have any seafarers on board, thankfully, but it is an abandoned ship.
My goodness. You're listening to Sue Dyett, who's Regional Director of Australia and PNG for the Mission to Seafarers. We're talking about the diabolical position of seafarers in the Strait of Hormuz, and indeed we'll talk about just being in conflict when you are trapped on a ship. Of those seafarers who died, and as I say, we don't know so much about the situation, do you have any information about whether Australians are there in this position?
At this stage, I have no knowledge of any there, but that doesn't mean that they aren't out there. We have a very small contingent of Australian seafarers that do international shipping around that region. Predominantly, seafarers come from the Philippines, from India, from China, from Myanmar, increasingly, and from other parts of the world. And they're the ones that are on board these ships.
Are you in constant touch with other welfare organisations around the world and in the region?
Definitely. The Mission to Seafarers is a global organisation. And I'm one of 8 regional directors around the world, and we are constantly talking to each other about what is happening and where we can assist each other and our teams. We have teams across the Philippines that actually work with the families of seafarers. So our teams are constantly asking, you know, how do we help the families back home? Because it's not just the individual that's affected by this, it's the family. Recently, we had a seafarer that unfortunately was injured on board his ship, was taken to Darwin Hospital, and as they turned off his life support machine, we were there with the family who weren't able to leave the Ukraine. They had to do all of this remotely on screens. And so we were there holding not only the seafarer's hands, but the family's hands.
My goodness. It's 13 minutes to 12. We're talking about seafarers. If you're a seafarer or have a loved one who has been, give me a call. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. Sue Dyett, what are the rights of these workers? Shipping companies abandoning crew can be a real issue. Is that right?
It is a real issue globally. There are some great shipping companies out there. Please don't get me wrong. There are some wonderful shipping companies that respect their teams. They're not putting them in danger. There are some wonderful captains that really care for their crew. But there are also some rogue operators that fly a flag of convenience. They're registered in countries that don't care about their seafarers. They don't care about the ships and the quality of the ship. And the seafarers are in dire straits. So only this morning I know of several ships and our teams over in the Gulf that are delivering food to ships because there is no way that they can get a providore out, someone to actually give them food, water.
How are they delivering the food safely at no risk to themselves, or are they doing it at risk to themselves?
There is risk to themselves, but they take every care that they possibly can. But our teams are very dedicated to the work that we've been doing around the world since 1857. This isn't our first conflict.
No, there's been a few since then. I understand the government's currently looking for ways to increase the number of seafarers. Is that right?
They are. The strategic fleet, you've spoken about how we've got petrol rationing, we only have enough fuel in the country for a certain amount of days. And to ensure that the Australian government has enough seafarers to man ships for ourselves so that we're not isolated, not relying on other countries. They're looking to increase the amount of ships that we hold under the Australian flag so we're not relying on our neighbours.
How reliant on our neighbours are we at the moment?
We're very reliant upon our neighbours at the moment. We don't have a significant amount of flag vessels in Australia. But the government has recognised that, and they are looking to put more ships into the fleet, and that means that we need more Australian seafarers. And to do that, whilst training is, they're looking at streamlining training through Industry Skills Australia and ensuring that there are a good quality seafarers, good pathways for being a seafarer. And it doesn't, and a seafaring life can be fun. It can be interesting. You do get to see the world.
I was going to say, Sue Dyett, that, you know, it's a singular situation to be talking about spruiking for this as a industry, as a job, when you have a global war with no end in sight and with such high stakes.
It is difficult to talk about it, but ultimately for Australians, there should be a way that we have pathways in careers, especially for women, surprisingly enough. There's great careers for women in shipping. I'm a member of several different women in shipping groups, and it's an opportunity to actually create a really good engagement pathway. And you know, you've got to remember, shipping also is the ships that go between Melbourne and Tasmania.
Well,
shipping
indeed.
Also that,
yeah.
Exactly. You know, we have coastal shipping. We do actually move things around the coast when rail lines fail, when there's bushfires.
I can imagine in the best of times it is one of the most exciting things that you could do. Sue, Les has texted in saying, please ask if she still needs beanies for seafarers.
Definitely. In our 28 centres around Australia and around the world, we give seafarers beanies. You'd be surprised how many cadets turn up, and it's a lot colder out on the ocean than they recognise. Last year alone, we gave away 49,286 beanies to seafarers.
So how can people help?
They can drop them into their local Mission to Seafarers or Stella Maris Centre, and or just jump on our website, mts.org.au, and find the local centre there.
Before I let you go, Sue Dyett, we should end on a bit of a happier note, because seafaring, as I say, could be one of the best ways to live and to have a life. What other measures are you doing? What are in place to sort of improve the well-being of seafarers more generally?
In Australia, we're very fortunate that the regulators, the Australian Maritime Safety Authority, have committed a marine order that shore leave is compulsory available to seafarers. So it means that we have the opportunity that seafarers can come ashore in Australia. It's easy for them to do. They only need to ring us up and we can pick them up in our centres, in our buses, and take them out kangaroo watching, shopping. We do an awful lot of shopping for seafarers, and because we had over 97,500 attending our centres last year.
Sue, Karen has just texted it in saying, never heard of seafaring as a job. Do they send information to high schools?
They're trying to.
This is where it starts, Karen.
A wonderful career. You can jump online. Industry Skills Australia have great information about maritime careers. You can be an engineer.
Karen's
a follow-up. You can be a naval architect.
Karen has a follow-up text, Sue. Does it pay well?
It does pay well. It pays very well.
That's all we need to know. Sue, you've done a very good job of selling this great job at a very difficult time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That's Sue Dyett, Regional Director of Australia and PNG for the Mission to Seafarers. Yes, a marvellous trade. Our thoughts are with all of those seafarers who are stranded and trapped in the Strait of Hormuz, of course, but there are many, many more bringing us all the global trade that we rely on. It's 6 minutes to 12, and we have been talking the effect of fuel prices. We will get to more of your texts as well, but Dale Webster, an independent journalist, has contacted us. Hi, Dale. You've been looking at the effect of the fuel issue in regional towns.
Yes, over many years, I've been looking at bank closures, but when this fuel situation has started. I'm based regionally, so I can see it firsthand. I can see the impacts it's already having on decisions to travel and people's ability to get on the road. And it occurred to me that the banking crisis is going to really affect people as well, because people are having to, just with the closures. In recent times, many, many towns have a minimum of, a half-hour trip or one-hour round trip just to do basic banking anymore. So, we will be impacted.
That has been a trend, of course. How many – is that an average hour-long trip that you're saying that most people would have to make?
Oh, I wouldn't say average. Look, some people are having to travel up to – they've done estimates, 4 hours there and back to get to a bank. I would have had, if I knew I was coming on air, I probably would have had a few more figures.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, Dale. So
I have looked at this, and the distance that people are traveling is or expected to travel, because many, many people cannot do that travel. But yes, there's a lot of people on the roads traveling from their town to do their banking.
And it can't all be done online, can it? I guess because that's what the devil's advocate would say.
No. There is so much that's still needed to be done face-to-face. Like you have most of your essential banking is you need to appear at a branch if you want to sort out a scam or anything to do with cash, perhaps if you've had a relative die. Any of those issues require someone a face-to-face. Even changing your office bearers in an organisation requires two of you to front up at a bank. So yes, there's still a lot of work that has to be done face-to-face in a branch.
Dale, thanks for giving us an insight into what's happening, and we should touch base with you again as this fuel price crisis at least goes on.
I'll have a closer look at the numbers, and but I think it is, it's not just banking, it's those local services that have been removed from towns that regional people are being forced to drive to even bigger centres to access.
Part of a much bigger conversation. Dale, thank you. Dale Webster is an independent journalist and is looking at all of that. So much to think about, so many ripple effects from this fuel crisis. Thank you very much for joining me today. You can catch all of the conversations today if you look for the Conversation Hour podcast on the ABC Listen app. Have a wonderful day and join me again tomorrow.